You're listening to
Sex Gets Real.
Sex Gets Real.
Sex Gets Real.
Sex Gets Real.
With Dawn Sarah.
With Dawn Sarah.
Thanks. Bye.
Hey, listeners. Welcome to this week's episode of Sex Gets Real. I'm going to be fielding a bunch of your questions because they have been pouring in over the past couple of weeks. I am committed to doing some more episodes where I engage with you because your questions are always so amazing. If you have questions, you can always send those in at sexgetsreal.com using the contact form. I also just posted some new listener questions on Patreon for those of you who support the show at $10 or more. You can be or practice being a sexpert by offering your advice to some of the yummy questions that I get. And then I can share your answers on the air alongside my answer. I also have a new diary entry coming up. So if you support at the $5 level, you can hear that very soon. I'm also creating a brand new online workshop all about porn. I'm going to be talking about ways that you can consume it ethically, where you can find really great porn that's created ethically, and also ways that you can introduce it to a partner and ways that you can use it to help you explore your own fantasies and pleasure. So if you have been feeling curious about ways that you can introduce porn to a relationship or just explore it with a little bit more mindfulness than the way so many of us consume our porn, stay tuned for that. It'll be online. It'll be super affordable. I'm really excited about it. And let's get to your questions. The first question comes from Emma, and it says, "Hey Dawn, my name is Emma and I love your show. I'm currently catching up on all of the old episodes with Dylan. Here's my situation. I have known this certain man for 3 to 4 years now, and we've only gotten together maybe 6 or 7 times in that time span. A little about him. He's 31, a workaholic engineer who makes over 6 figures, and although that's wonderful for him, that's not why I'm interested. He and I would both agree that we have such an amazing connection. Neither of us can truly explain it. We want each other so badly, and our sex is phenomenal. Nothing like either of us has had before. So what's the problem? I don't even know. This man is terrified to commit. He will speak to me for a few days, vanish from anywhere for a few weeks to a few months. He just does not speak to me. I get so unbelievably angry with him, and he always blames it on his job because he's so committed to it, or that I scare him because he knows what a good fit I am, which I can understand, but this has happened more times than I can count, and I'm sick of it. I can't stay away from him, though. I've not seen him in 2 years because he relocated for work, and we're now 3 hours apart. He always mentions that he wants to see me on the weekend, but when the weekend gets here, he's nowhere to be found. He didn't speak to me for almost 3 days, and I messaged him several times trying to find an answer. No reply. Just a few days prior, he ordered me this G-spot and clit vibrator that was almost $300 and said he wanted to use it on me. I sent him a message telling him thank you when it arrived, and he finally answered, and he completely blew up on me for the last few days that I tried to message him, calling me needy. I felt speechless and misunderstood, and I really didn't know what to say. I don't feel like I'm being needy, but more so demanding respect. I hate being ignored. I think it's rude and cowardly. It would be one thing if he's only done this once, but it happens every time we speak. I'm so confused, Dawn. Any advice? Thank you so much, Emma." Oh, Emma. I'm so sorry you're going through this. I'm so sorry that he is such a complete jackass. Basically, what he's doing is shit-tastic, and there is no way around that at all. If someone is interested in you, then they prioritize you. If someone cares about you, they prioritize you. If someone is actually invested in you and respects you and wants to treat you with dignity, then they'll show up. and they'll care about your feelings and they'll follow through on their promises. And he's not doing any of those things. I think that he likes the power. I think he likes knowing that you're there without him actually having to do any of the hard work that's involved with following through on his commitments. So even though the sex is amazing and you feel like you have an amazing connection, what I'm hearing here is a totally abusive manipulator that is taking advantage of you, who only talks to you when he wants to, who buys you things to try and keep you interested, and then totally freaks out when you don't behave the way that he wants you to behave. So all of that is to say, I think this man doesn't deserve a single minute of your time. You've spent 3 or 4 years only seeing him a handful of times, and he's not participating at a level that feels good for you. And I know it's so hard when we find someone that we have an amazing connection with and we have incredible sex with, and it feels like we can't let it go. And that's because our brains are actually behaving the way that our brains behave when we're on cocaine. This new relationship energy that happens for all of us when we first get into one of these very hot relationships, and NRE can last for years if we're not seeing each other very often. It's the exact same brain response as when you're on cocaine, which is why we tend to make terrible decisions and why we tend to not really stick by our boundaries and our worth when we're in this situation, because we feel completely intoxicated. And like, if we let this thing go, it's going to be horrible and we'll never find anything like it again. And none of those things are true. So I don't care that he's a workaholic. I don't care how much money he makes. I don't care that he's great in bed. He's treating you terribly. And there are so many other people out there who will give you their time and their energy, who will follow through on their commitments, who won't disappear for weeks or months, which is completely inexcusable if that's not something that you've previously negotiated. And there is literally nothing redeeming about what you've shared. So my advice to you, Emma, is to proudly, proudly kick this guy to the curb. You deserve so much better. You deserve someone who isn't going to yank you around and try and manipulate you and control you and then blow up at you when you're actually asking for check-ins and information about kind of what's going on. So fuck him. Let him go. This is not how you treat someone when you respect them. And it's pretty clear to me he does not respect you. So thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for being part of the show. You deserve so much better than this. And believe me, so much better is out there. You don't deserve to be ignored. And he's ignoring you. And he's doing everything on his terms. And that's completely shitty. So good luck. I hope that you find someone who is much better to you. And we'll dive into the next listener question. I actually got 2 questions that were very similar, just about a week apart. So the first one says, "Hey Dawn, I'm a big fan of your podcast. I've been listening to you for a while now, and I've enjoyed how much you've opened my eyes to different lifestyles. I have a quick question about what your opinion is on raising kids around having a sex positive family. When I have kids, I want them to not be scared to have conversations about sex, and I want them to be more educated and informed than how I was growing up. It wasn't until I was 15 years old that I found out the penis had to be inserted into the vagina to be considered penetration. I know a lot of parents don't want to have the birds and the bees talk with their kids at a young age, but I think sex shouldn't be a hidden thing when they're entering into their teen years. What do you think? How would you raise your kids by talking to them about sex? Thanks much, Maddie." And a few days before your email came in, Maddie, I got an email from someone from Brazil that says, "Dear Dawn, after listening to your podcasts for a while, I wanted to let you know that it feels like a great privilege to have become one of your Patreon supporters. It feels great to be able to support you with more than my welcome ears, heart, and mind, and to show you how much I appreciate the awesome work you're doing. So first of all, thank you so much to you for supporting me on Patreon. Every single time I get a pledge, I swear to God, I do a happy dance. And then the email continues, you've helped me and are helping me in so many ways to revisit what sex and my body mean to me and what sex means in our culture. After listening to your podcast with Rachel Hills, I bought The Sex Myth and I have found it so enlightening. As a mother of three children, ages 8, 11, and 13, I worry about how to help them not succumb to the harmful myths and taboos around sex and experiencing pleasure, and the fairy tale we propagate as a culture that somehow real love, in quotes, or really great sex, in quotes, just happens. And if it doesn't just appear, then somehow we don't deserve it. I love all your talk about permission and your insisting on the reality that great sex requires being able to open up to great, potentially difficult and awkward conversations. I have all sorts of hang-ups and issues to work through around sex, permission, and relationships. I would so love for my children not to find themselves in the place I am a few decades down the road. I want to be able to help give them the tools and skills that they need to take ownership of their own bodies and experiences, and be able to look forward to a lifetime of healthy, positive, respectful, and responsible sex and relationships. But where do I start? And after more assertively opening up the proverbial can of worms, what next? Based on another of your podcasts, I purchased Anastasia Higginbotham's book, Tell Me About Sex, Grandma, though I haven't yet explored it with any of my kids. I would love your recommendations about other resources that I and they could explore and discuss, together and alone. You certainly don't need to mention me in your podcast, but I would love to hear your thoughts on helping children and teens to navigate sex positively. Thank you so much for your continued passion and drive to learn and help others learn about all that is real sex. I love these questions. So both of you, I love that you're thinking about these things and the struggles that you had and the impact that it could have on your kids and how to navigate these spaces that are so complicated, because none of us lives in a vacuum. You know, we all know that, but it can feel really difficult in our own lives when we're trying to push against the current that is this great big river of crap that we're all swimming in when it comes to our bodies and our voices and sex and relationships. You know, we have to wake up every single day and recommit and relearn and reheal. It's not a one-time thing. And so I love that you're thinking about these things and how to offer them to your kids. So the first thing I want to recommend is Anastasia Higginbotham actually has a couple of other books, and there's going to end up being six, I think, in the whole series of Ordinary Terrible Things. And so Tell Me About Sex, Grandma is the third book. You can get two other books about divorce and death. I think they're all really important, even though what we're talking about is sex, because what the books are doing are giving the adult and the young person an opportunity to actually talk about really tough things, to talk about big feelings and complicated situations, and honoring the things that are happening for young people in these complicated spaces. That kind of discussion is exactly the kind of discussion that young people need to practice from the youngest of ages so that they can navigate those discussions as they get older with so much more ease. So Anastasia has three others that are coming out down the road, so definitely keep your eye open for those. But I would recommend all of the books in that series. I also would highly recommend Corey Silverberg's books. The first one is What Makes a Baby, and it is a perfect book for like 6 to 7 year olds, 5 to 7 year olds, just at that age when they're starting to kind of ask questions about maybe bodies and where babies come from. It's a beautiful book that is completely free of assumptions about the types of families that kids might come from, the types of bodies that parents might have or caregivers might have. It's a really, really, really great look at all the different ways that we can make family, but it helps to just start giving young people a way to engage with questions and with an adult in a really safe, creative space. And again, that's what we want, right? When we're talking about kind of breaking down these cultural myths and these really terrible, toxic messages we get, a huge part of it is learning how to have conversation and how to be awkward at conversation and learning how to kind of figure out what you're feeling and what you want to say. And so one of the amazing things about both Anastasia and Corey Silverberg's books is they help you to engage in that space where as an adult, you might actually say, I don't know, I'll have to think about that. Or that's not what I learned when I was growing up, but I sure want you to learn that. And I think the most important thing we can do for our young people is to help them find their words and to name their experiences and to see them as valid and important. Because culturally, what we do is we teach people that their voices and their experiences aren't important and that they shouldn't share them, especially if they diverge from what everyone considers quote unquote normal. So the more we can teach young people that that actually isn't important, that their experience is what's important, and that teaching them the trust, that's how we start getting these really powerful, strong, empowered individuals who can then stand in these awkward conversations and not run from them or feel terrified by them. The other book that Corey Silverberg has that's for kind of the preteen phase, so I'd say like 9 to 12 year olds, is Sex is a Funny Word. It talks about gender and genitals and consent and talking about these things. And it includes bodies that are disabled and queer and fat. And it's this beautiful book that the first time I read it actually made me cry, because if I had had a book like that growing up, it would have changed so many things for me. But I highly recommend both of those books. As your kids start getting a little bit older, a fantastic resource is always Scarlatine. I will link to all of these things on Sex Gets Real for this episode, so don't worry about writing it all down or remembering it while you're listening. But Scarlatine is definitely for teenagers, so it's something you might want to start exploring together, you know, when they're 13, 14, but then knowing that they can go there as they get into high school years and seeing it as a safe, trustworthy resource that has some of the best information, I think, out there for young people around sex and gender and bodies. And there are some like peer-led forums and then also articles by people who teach to young people. Nadine Thornhill, of course, has amazing resources on her website. She specifically teaches parents how to navigate sex and sex positivity with their kids. She has some wonderful YouTube videos, so totally check out Nadine's work, because that might just help you along the way and also just be someone that you can ping and talk to. John Gottman, who is really well known for a lot of his work around marriages, has also done a lot of work with children. And he's got a book called How to Raise an Emotionally Intelligent Child, I believe. I'm not looking at the exact title, but I believe that's what it's called. That could be a really fantastic resource as well, because when we're talking about sex, it's not really the sex that's the issue, right? It's being afraid of our bodies. It's not understanding our edges. It's not understanding what feels good for us, and then how to say yes to those things and how to say no to those things. It's not knowing how to engage with others and to really be able to set those boundaries, to ask for what you want and to be able to say what you don't want. And so I think a huge part of raising sex positive kids is from the earliest age that you possibly can, knowing that it's never too late to change the conversation. But from the earliest of ages, if we can talk about bodies and make kids realize that every single part of their body is theirs and that no one part is more special or weird or bizarre than the other, so that they have this feeling of full autonomy and sovereignty, that every part of their body is theirs and special and beautiful. Not shaming kids around exploring their bodies, giving them age-appropriate resources to have conversations. And the more you can model having those awkward conversations, the better they're going to be at being resilient around them. And then the emotional intelligence piece, like how do we help young people get over the fear of rejection and to see that they can survive when things don't feel good, and to let them know, like, I will love you when you're sad. I will love you when you're mad. I will love you when you feel unworthy. I will love you when you mess up. All of those tools help give young people the resilience so that when they get into situations and they have to say no to someone, or they have to maybe stop a sexual encounter in the middle of it, they have that underlying understanding that they're still lovable and worthy, even when they do or say a hard thing. So I think that's critical. It's just helping them to model that. And then, of course, talking to them about pleasure. We are so terrified that if we talk about pleasure with young people, that they're going to like go off on some hedonistic adventure. And that is just not borne out by the research over and over and over and over again. So when we talk to kids about the fact that their bodies are built for pleasure and they are allowed to experience them and explore them on their own terms, that they are allowed to ask questions about pleasure and be in pleasure, and also to help them learn how to navigate boundaries and understanding their body as their own, that's where so many of us as adults just don't know how to have that conversation because we don't even know what we want. No one's ever asked us and helped us to cultivate that. There's a couple of other resources that I will put on the website for you so that you can check that out. But the fact that you're even asking these questions to both of you who wrote in puts you way ahead of kind of the rest of the pack when it comes to how we engage with sex and bodies and relationships and our kids, because it's really not about the sex, right? It's about all the stuff that we need in order to be able to actually engage on our own terms in our own bodies when it feels really hard to do that. And that's where we get kind of icked out, right? Because it's not actually about the penis and vagina stuff, which of course, if you start talking to them about their bodies and how they're feeling and things they want to know, then when it comes to actually offering information about the actual acts of sex, it's so much easier than just kind of out of the blue trying to do the birds and the bees. But even more than that is arming them with those tools of self-worth and resilience and understanding their own edges and where they begin and end. That is priceless. So thank you for asking this question. Be sure to head to the website for this episode and grab all those resources, books, Nadine's links. I will have a couple of other things, Scarlatine, and just make sure that you're constantly making information available to them. And also let kids know that it doesn't have to be you that they talk to. It can be a trusted adult. And then talk to all the other adults in their life and let them know your values and what you're trying to teach the kids. So that if for some reason your kids reach out to an aunt or to an uncle or to a teacher, you as the parent have already had that conversation with those trusted adults about what you're trying to make clear to them. So then those adults can decide if they can align with those values or send them to some other resource. But have those conversations with the grown-ups too, you know, so that you can actually create a community of support and it's not just you by yourself kind of chipping away. Thank you for those wonderful questions. Okay, so I got a question from someone who wants to talk about threesomes and herpes. So it says, "Good morning, Dawn. I'm reaching out because I recently heard one of your Sex Gets Real episodes and found it very raw and straight to the point, which I loved. I'm seeking advice on how I can get around to meeting someone to join in a threesome. I would like to give you an insight onto my relationship. I've been with my boyfriend for about 2 years. We have a healthy, open, honest, trusting, open relationship. However, in my relationship, my boyfriend sees other people and I'm a little bit more loyal to him. I'm fine with the way our relationship works, but I do find myself frustrated because although I don't seek intimacy with anyone else, I do want to bring another woman into my relationship because I want to enjoy sexual pleasure with someone else the same way that my boyfriend does. The real issue, though, is I have genital herpes and my boyfriend doesn't. We're very careful and we protect each other. Our intimacy is healthy and erotic. I guess my question is, how do I go about finding a third party for us with my herpes? And where do I find such a person? Do you know any websites or good hookup places? Because I want to be able to enjoy my life to the fullest. I'm not ashamed of my STD. I accept it for what it is, and I'm open to tell my story with no shame or regret, but I need some help. Thank you and have a blessed day. Thank you so much for writing in. I love that you are very open about your herpes status. So many lovely, wonderful, sexy, delicious people in the world have either herpes 1 or herpes 2. It's super common. So I love that that's something that you're really open about and that you and your boyfriend navigate. When it comes to finding other people to be a part of your relationship, whether it's for a one-time threesome or an ongoing kind of triad situation, the best thing that you can do is just be really open and to be armed with information and then to allow people to decide for themselves. Herpes is pretty common. So for people who are moderately open to dating multiple people, they're probably going to have encountered people who have herpes or HPV. And so being able to talk about barriers and tests and gloves and all that kind of stuff is just going to be a really great practice to be able to talk about. So let them choose. I don't think that's a huge deal. I think what's interesting is that you're very specific about what you're looking for. And, you know, the kind of the trope that is open relationships is a committed couple who wants to find that elusive third woman to be part of their relationship. That's why they're called unicorns, because it's kind of the thing everybody wants, and then it's very hard to find. So I'll just say you can absolutely find people who are interested in non-monogamy and open relationships on OkCupid, definitely on Tinder. Just be really open in your profile about what you're looking for, who you're looking for, how you're going to find them. Maybe get involved with like local swinger communities and poly communities. Meet up, you know, at poly munches, which are just like get-togethers where everyone talks and hangs out. And you can do the same thing like with the kink community. But, you know, when you want to find someone to actually date and engage with, you have to just start putting yourself out there. So that might be OkCupid with an updated profile for both you and your boyfriend in a single profile so that it shows that you're a couple. It might be going out to some, you know, classes or meetups with non-monogamous folks and swingers and just getting to know people and kind of see who's out there in your area and what's going on. I think the most important thing to remember is that it's really, really, really easy when you are in a committed relationship like the one that you're in to mistreat and abuse a third. If you are just bringing them in because you want to even the score, because you're feeling left out, because you want to make things kind of exciting, and it's about you and your boyfriend, that is not taking that third person as a full human being with feelings who might have feelings for one of you more than the other, or who might want to have a different kind of engagement with the two of you than you've already thought of. So I think it's good to know, I'd love to find a third, and here's kind of what I'm looking for. But also just kind of keep in mind that if you do bring someone else in to your existing relationship, you now are in relationship with that person too. And you need to really keep their needs and wants and desires and feelings at the top of your mind and not see them as this little toy or this way to just kind of make your existing relationship more fun, because that's a really shitty way to treat a human being. And also be open to other things. You know, maybe it's another couple. Maybe it's a queer person or a trans person. Maybe it's who knows. I would say just get out and start meeting people, even just as friends. If you can have lots of other people who are in open relationships as friends, I think it makes this space so much easier to just navigate and talk about and commiserate about, and also so that you can find out where the next party is happening or where the next super awesome meetup is going on, that you might meet some really interesting people who are practicing solo polyamory or relationship anarchy, who might want to be a part of your relationship. So put yourself out there online, go to some in-person events, build some community, and be open about your herpes status and ask what would make people feel comfortable and sexy about it and go from there. I think that you're definitely on the right track. You just have to kind of ask yourself some questions, put yourself out there, and hopefully something magical will happen. So thank you so much for writing in and good luck on your adventure. Okay, I got an email from someone named Lindsay and the subject line, being watched. So my boyfriend and I want to be watched during sex. We've done this one time and it was really hot. My question is, how do you approach other people to ask them to watch you? This has been our only hang up because anybody we think might be interested, we don't really know how to approach. Thanks. Well, the first thing that I want to offer Lindsay is, have you considered camming? That could be really fun. If you and your boyfriend really like being watched, then maybe you could take it online. You know, you can absolutely like wear masks or keep your face out of the picture if you don't want to be potentially captured online, right? Because anytime you do anything online, it's forever. But I know a lot of people who have exhibitionist fantasies and really liked being watched who do stuff online in front of a camera, either on Skype or as part of a cam site. Don't rule that out. That could be a really fun thing for you to explore. I also want to offer, Carol Queen has this really great book called Exhibitionism for the Shy. So if you're into being watched and showing off, that might be a really fun book that just gives you some ideas around being an exhibitionist and ways to explore that. As for finding people to watch you, my guess is if you were really upfront about wanting someone to watch you and then put a profile up on Tinder or put a profile up on or a post up on Craigslist, there's a lot of people. Or like FetLife, go to FetLife and do that for your local area. I can't imagine you're going to have a hard time finding someone who isn't going to want to watch you. Of course, you're going to have to navigate kind of what else might be involved. Is it literally that they just sit in the corner and they watch you and your boyfriend and then they jerk off and that's it? Is it that they watch you through a window, you know, kind of figure out what it is that you find hot and then just put out there in a couple of different spaces where folks engage sexually with each other. So FetLife, Tinder, OkCupid, you know, God, even Adult Friend Finder, and say that's what you're looking for. And then let people respond to that. And you can approach them as well and say, hey, this is what we're looking for. You're interested in. You might get lots of no's, but you're going to get no's even if you don't ask. So you might as well ask and see what happens. If there's someone really specific that you're interested in, I think there's ways to kind of approach that conversation of just kind of finding out what types of things they're interested in and if they've ever done anything sexually adventurous. You know, of course, it depends on the relationship you have with that person. Is it a really close friend where you've talked about sex before? Or is it someone you just kind of know? And so approaching them around sex might seem really shocking. You have to kind of gauge that. But I think that going online is going to be a really easy way for you to just start vetting folks. And of course, if you put an ad on FetLife or you create a profile on like OkCupid saying this is what you're looking for, you might get crickets. But you also might get like 50 people raising their hand, and then you get to do the thing that's true of any kind of sexual negotiation and learn a little bit more about them and who they are and maybe meet up for coffee, talk about it a little bit, and decide who feels like a good fit and who doesn't. And in the meantime, what are other ways that you can kind of scratch that itch while you're doing that? Is it filming yourselves on camera but not putting it online? Is it filming yourselves and wearing a mask and putting it online? Is it going to a sex club or a dungeon and having sex in a public area where sex is encouraged? You know, You don't have to play with other people if you go to a play party or if you go to a dungeon. You can absolutely go to a play party or a dungeon where there's sexual activities happening and just the two of you play with each other. And of course people are going to watch. That's part of the reason why people go, is to see what other people are doing and to watch hot things happening. So that could be another fun way to just kind of explore being watched and having sex in a space with other people who are having sex. And then you might actually meet people who are super into that and know how to talk about it. I hope that's helpful. I think the fact that you and your boyfriend have talked about this and already done it once means you're on the right track. So good luck, experiment, try all the things, and report back. This next email comes from Tori, and the subject line says, "I don't want my sexual past to decide my future." I've had so many negative experiences when it comes to sex. Sexual activities were enjoyable, but I've never felt satisfied, and rarely would anyone even be capable of bringing me to orgasm. Many partners were selfish in bed, and I was too green and nervous to bring up what I would like done or have changed. I've had male and female play partners, and I've tried to explore all shapes and sizes, yet I've never really enjoyed sex. I feel sexual and horny and have no problems playing with myself, but when trying to experience pleasure with a partner, I get too wrapped up in my head. To add hesitation, I'm also a 2-time rape survivor. Both men were men I was dating, so needless to say, I have trust issues and lack confidence in my own decision-making ability. It's been a few years, but I never think it will leave me entirely. Now, I'm in a happy, healthy relationship, but due to my past, I've asked to keep things slow. 6 months in, we've had no intercourse, but I've performed oral on him and he has touched me. I feel I'm ready to start to explore intercourse, but I'm super nervous. I'm worried I might get triggered or may end up not enjoying it and having a negative impact on our relationship. I 100% know that if I said no or stop, he would oblige. But how do I open up about my past and my worries without putting a lot of pressure on? I feel like it's a big deal for me, but I don't want to make it a big intimidating thing for us to move forward with. Tori, I so feel you. As someone who is a multiple rape survivor and who has had that happen inside of a relationship with someone I thought I could trust, it can really fuck with you. So the first thing I want to offer is I have, you know, been in and out of therapy here and there over the years. And I, over the past couple of months, have started working with a somatic experiencing therapist. And somatic experiencing is specifically for helping folks with trauma and PTSD. So it's a wonderful, wonderful therapy modality for rape survivors. And while I'm very new in the process, I have a friend who is getting certified in it, who is not my therapist, because, you know, that would be weird. But I have a friend who's a year into training with it, who's also a rape survivor and had amazing success. And I've talked to other people who have had a number of traumas, who have had amazing success with somatic experiencing. So I just want to offer that as a tool that you might want to explore in your journey of wanting to integrate and to find new ways to engage with your trauma and your distrust. So consider that as an option. It's been amazing for me, and I haven't even really started to scratch the surface of the trauma. We're just kind of laying the groundwork for it, but I'm already just feeling so hopeful about what it could mean for me afterwards. We never owe someone an explanation about our trauma unless we feel like it's a safe thing to do. That said, I think it's so important for us to disclose to the people that we're close to, especially the people we might be physically intimate with, what's happened to us, because then they can decide how they want to engage with that as well. Can they show up for us? Because let me tell you, if you're with someone and they can't handle you, you don't want to find that out when you are in the middle of being triggered and halfway through sex. That would potentially be so much more traumatizing and cause so much more damage. That's the kind of information you want before you put yourself in a potentially vulnerable situation. So if you're worried about getting triggered and you're worried about things having a negative impact on your relationship because you're committed to this person, then that conversation needs to happen before you get naked and engage in the intercourse. Your partner needs to decide he can show up for you in that way and create that space for you where you feel safe. That's how consent works on both sides, right? Now, you don't have to give any gory details. You don't have to go way into your trauma. You know, sometimes talking about what we've been through causes more trauma. So you certainly don't have to do that to yourself. But what you can do is let him know you've got some stuff that you would really like to share with him as much feels safe. And it's a big part of the reason why you've needed to go slow. And you can let him know you really want to experience more sexually with him. But before you do that, you need some help around just feeling supported and safe. And can you talk about that? Can we explore that together and see if he opts in? And if he does, then share as much feels good. And it can take many, many conversations over a long period of time before the whole story comes out, if that's even what you want to do. But it can be as simple as, I'm a survivor and I don't really want to share the details because I'm not in a place where I can do that right now. But I want you to know that I trust you and I really like where this is going. And here's the things that I'm scared of. And so here are some of the things that I think might make this a little bit more fun for both of us. And then brainstorm and collaborate and make it a place that's creative and fun. This is a way for you to build connection for the two of you in your relationship, is when you get to be creative and create together around these spaces and these issues and these problems. So invite him in around, what happens if I do get triggered? Or what's the thing you can do between where you've been and where you'd like to go? What's a midpoint between oral on him and him touching you and going all the way to intercourse? Is it masturbating in front of each other? Because you said you really don't have any problem giving yourself pleasure and playing with yourself. So maybe it's mutual masturbation. Maybe being naked together and orgasming together or offering yourselves pleasure is a really wonderful way to just be sexually with each other. Maybe it's getting halfway in and negotiating ahead of time that you'll, you know, stop and check in. Also, sometimes we don't know how we're going to react until we're in the moment. That's kind of how trauma works. You know, it's not very linear. So you might feel great and you might have sex. You might have intercourse and then you might have more intercourse and then you could have more intercourse. And then the 10th time in, massive trigger and something just terrible comes up for you. That's okay. That's kind of how trauma works. It sometimes sneaks up and surprises us and we don't know when and where it's going to happen. And so if you can just work with him around navigating the potential, and if he can show up and say, I'd love to do that with you, and like, let's make this fun, then I think you probably have a really good partner that can support you through this. I know you're also worried about maybe not enjoying the sex. So I think you just have to really kind of decide, what does enjoying it look like for you? Because just because every single story that's out there about intercourse is that a penis in a vagina feels amazing, guess what? It doesn't feel amazing for everybody. So maybe that's you. Maybe it only feels amazing in a very specific context with a very specific fantasy playing. Or maybe it only feels really good when you also have a magic wand, you know, buried in your clit. So kind of think about what enjoying it looks like. And if you can't find the words, then maybe exploring it with him a little bit is what that looks like. Maybe it's a sensual massage. Maybe it's practicing tantra. Maybe it's role playing. Maybe it's getting super kinky. Who knows? But enjoying it, in quotes, your version of that might not look like anybody else's, which doesn't mean it's bad or broken or wrong, but it does mean it's yours. And so giving yourself a chance to just kind of think through, like, when I think about pleasurable sex, what might that look like? And then start kind of playing in that space. You know, I think one of the things that we do is we put pressure on ourselves that sex has to mean a certain thing and intercourse has to feel a certain way. And then when those expectations aren't met, it feels terrible. And then that takes a toll on the relationship. But if you go in knowing this is just going to be an experiment and maybe his penis in your vagina isn't your favorite thing in the world, well, that's okay. You can still do things that aren't your favorite thing. Maybe he loves it. But you do get to find the thing that is your favorite thing. And maybe that's dry humping. Maybe that's finger banging. Maybe that's watching porn and then masturbating yourself to orgasm while he watches. It can be so many things. So just remember, like, you are allowed to explore in this space. You are allowed to feel timid and scared. You are not broken. You are not wrong. You have been through experiences that have changed you. And that is the life of a survivor. But use this as a place to be playful and creative and to ask for his input. And also let him know, here are some places where I've been and they haven't felt really good. So I'm kind of not really sure how this is going to feel. But I'd really love it if we could play and try lots of different things and positions and toys and scenarios and locations and just kind of try and find what feels good for me. And no, you can always go back to taking care of yourself because that feels good. I hope that gives you a jumping off point. And I hope that the conversation that you have with your partner goes wonderfully. I hope that he can show up for you in that way and that he's excited that you opened up to him. And just know that if for whatever reason he decides he needs to opt out, it is not you. It is him. And then you get to move on and find someone who does want to opt in. So play and be patient with yourself. And also check out somatic experiencing. There's therapists that do SE all over the world. Lots of folks in the US and Canada. So that might be a place to explore too, if you wanted to kind of, you know, untangle some of the trauma. Thank you so much, Tori. Good luck. We have one last question for this week's show, and then we will be wrapping up. Don't forget, you can support the show at patreon.com/sexgetsreal. Every single dollar helps. If you support at the $5 level, then you get amazing karma and access to my audio diary entries that I upload a couple of times a month. And then if you support at the $10 level, you get to try on being a sexpert and help me field some of the questions that I get. So here's the last question. It's from Nathan, and the subject line is chastity belt. I'm a male who is really into wearing a chastity belt, and I fantasize about my girlfriend being my key holder, who would tease me constantly and deny me orgasm. The only thing is, I don't know how to convince her to be my key holder and do this with me. She knows I have the chastity device, but I'm not sure if she would be into trying this. What should I do? I just shared an amazing, amazing response to a question, kind of similar to this, that Andre Shakti wrote for her I Am Polly and So Can You weekly advice giving blog. So someone wrote in asking, how do I convince my girlfriend and a friend of ours to have a threesome? And her response is pretty brutal, but very honest. And I will post a link to it on the Sex Gets Real page for this episode if you want to read it, because I love it and I retweeted it. The word convince gives me a little bit of yuck. We don't convince anyone to do anything when it comes to sex. That's rape. We don't ever convince someone to do something that they don't want to do. We don't manipulate them or coerce them or or do anything that makes them feel like they have to, or they don't have a choice, or this is the only option. There is no convincing. We do not do that. What you can do, though, is have an invitation, have a conversation, make an ask, maybe spend some time negotiating, maybe bringing it up and letting her sit with it for a while, and then circling back a couple months down the road and just checking in and seeing where she is, having information at the ready so that maybe if she's really not sure what that means, you can show her with some articles or some erotica or some porn. So she knows you have the chastity device and you're not sure if she would be into trying it. Well, the only way to know is to actually ask. And there's a lot of different ways that you can ask. You can watch some porn or read some erotica together that involves a chastity device and kind of find out what she thinks about it. You can be super brave and just say, okay, I have this thing that I've been fantasizing about and I'm super scared that you're going to judge me, but I just kind of want to put it on the table. And if you have questions, let me know. If it's just an absolute no, also let me know. And then we can just kind of go from there and then let her know what you're interested in. I think it's also important to just realize that sometimes when we're with people, the things we fantasize about aren't the things they're going to be interested in. And that doesn't make our fantasy bad. It doesn't mean we're wrong for having it. It might mean, though, that it just lives in our head and in our bodies and in the porn that we watch and in the ways we engage with ourselves. It might mean opening up your relationship. It might mean getting really creative and instead of wearing a chastity device, negotiating something else with her where she teases you. So allow this to be a place where you're creative and you're asking questions and you're allowing something to be created together. Because if you just cling way too tightly to this very specific fantasy, one, the expectation is just going to feel super shitty. But two, the likelihood that someone else can deliver on your specific fantasy is very small. And that just feels terrible. So use this as a jumping off point rather than an end point. And just remember, you never want to convince someone to do something when it comes to sex and their bodies and the way they engage with you. But what you can do is make it an invitation and an ongoing discussion and decide to be the courageous one that opens up and offers this vulnerable piece of yourself. If she totally shuts you down and shames you, that gives you a lot of information about the kind of person she is, and that's probably not someone you want to be in a relationship with. But if she holds that information and thinks about it and still decides, you know, I don't think this is something I'm interested in, well, you can always circle back, you know, a year or two down the road. Don't pester her. But make this a place where maybe you can have some fun. Like, maybe it's not the chastity belt, but what's something we can do instead? What are some other things we could play with? Have you ever wanted to try rope? Maybe you could do something with rope and a little, like, temporary rope chastity belt while she teases you. Or there's so many things. But you are going to have to be brave enough to initiate that conversation and to let her in. Otherwise, you'll never find out. And that would also be a shame to never have asked. Because what if the answer is yes? What if the answer is, I would try that? You only find out by asking. So good luck, Nathan. I hope that the conversation goes well. I hope that she's interested, and I hope that the two of you find a super fun way to play in this space and to create something delicious that works for the both of you. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. I will, of course, be back next week. I have an amazing interview with Jacqueline Friedman that I've been sitting on for weeks because she has a new book coming out soon called Unscrewed. And of course, we wanted the episode and our chat to go around the time that her book was getting released so that you didn't have to hear all this fucking amazing stuff about the book, but then you couldn't get the book because that would be shitty. So that's coming out really soon. I'm going to be having Barbara Corellis on to talk about Tantra super soon. And of course, send me your questions. I'm going to be doing more episodes where I answer your questions because you have been flooding me with them and I want more. head to sexgetsreal.com, use the contact form, send me what you got. Also, don't forget to support me on Patreon and keep your eyes peeled, because probably in the next week or so, I will be releasing an online workshop that's on demand. You can take it anytime you want, all about porn. So stay tuned, and I'll talk to you next week. Bye.